tradition came from Buddha Shakyamuni's teaching, and when he appears to this world, or when he enters into the Queen Mayadevi's womb, at that time Queen Mayadevi dreamed of white elephant with six stars entering into her body. So he came from the heavenly realm of Dushita to this world, and while he was in the mother's womb, mother has no pain at all. And then when he was born in Lumbini, at that time also mother Queen Mayadevi does not have any pain, and with great joy mother was able to deliver Prince Siddhartha. And his father was called the King Suddhodana. So they are the king and queen of the kingdom of Kapilavastu. So right after he was born in the Lumini Garden, he did seven steps. And after each step, where he stepped, the place where he stepped, appears one lotus each. And then he said, he is the excellent being of this world, etc. So he was an extraordinary being who appeared to this world. At that time, many other kings also had sun, and also there are many good signs appeared at this time. So Prince Siddhartha was born with great signs, extraordinary signs. And then when he was a child, he was extraordinary in any actions. And then later, when he was in kingdom, one day he went out and saw a sick person. At that time, he really felt the physical pain and mental suffering that that person is experiencing. So he really felt that experience to himself. And then when he returns, he really thought about it. And he really thought about how to solve such problem or how to overcome such suffering. And then he thought, if he learned medicine, then it can cure just the physical sickness, but not the suffering completely. So he thought there's a way, there's a method that can eliminate all the sufferings. And then later when he went out again, he saw old age person. At that time, just like before, he really felt the physical pain and mental suffering of this old age to himself. And then again when he went out, he saw dead person or suffering of death. So he really felt such suffering to himself. So due to this, he thought just staying in a kingdom is not the right way to help and to benefit all the beings. So he renounced his kingdom, and then he looked for Dharma and he practiced Dharma for a long time. At one time, when he was under a Bodhi tree doing meditation, at that time, many evils, they tried to create obstacles for his meditation by showering weapons and also by emanating many beautiful girls dancing in front of him. But due to his own power of loving kindness and compassion, he defeated all these evil spirits or malas, and also he turned the shower of weapons into the shower of flowers. So all these are possible through the power of practice, through the power of loving kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta. So then eventually he attained the Buddhahood in Bodh Gaya, which is the second most important noble activities of Buddha Shakyamuni, first being the Lumbini where he was born. Second is the Bodh Gaya where he attained Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. And then he said he got nectar-like precious and profound Dharma teaching, but no one are ready to receive such precious and profound teaching, so he didn't turn the wheel of Dharma right after he attained the Buddhahood. But then, like Brahmas and others, they supplicate to Buddha to turn the wheel of Dharma. And then, after 49 days from attaining the Buddhahood, he turned the first wheel of Dharma in Deer Park, Sarnath, Varanasi, to five fortunate disciples on four noble truths, which are known as the truth of suffering, truth of origination, truth of cessation, and the truth of path. So from that time onwards, Buddha has given enormous amount of teachings in order to suit the different mentalities of the followers, so that they can be free from the lower realms and also from a whole samsara, and they can attain liberation, and eventually they can attain the state of Buddhahood. So Buddha's third main activity is turning the wheel of Dharma in Deer Park, Sarnath, Varanasi. And then he bestowed many teachings to many different followers. Actually, Buddha can teach to many different followers at the same time through his one voice in their own languages and also in different topics according to their own mentalities. So after turning the wheel of Dharma for many, many years, then at the end, to show the impermanence, he entered into the Mahaparinirvana between the two trees in Kushinaga. So actually, this is the fourth main noble activities of the Buddha, and all these four main noble activities are related with the environment or related with the trees. Buddha was born under the tree, Buddha has attained the Buddhahood under the Bodhi tree, and Buddha has turned the wheel of Dharma for the first time in Deer Park where there's a forest. Finally, Buddha entered into the Mahaparinirvana between the two trees. So Buddha's four main activities are directly related with the trees or with the environment. So according to the Mahayana tradition, all these noble activities are for the eyes of common people. In reality, Buddha Shakyamuni has attained the Buddhahood countless eons before he entered into this world as Prince Siddhartha. These four places, such as the place of birth, the place of attaining the Buddhahood, the place of first turning the wheel of Dharma, and the place of entering into the Mahaparinirvana, are considered as the four most holy places for all the Buddhist followers, because these four places are the ones that Buddha performed the four main noble activities. So before Buddha Shakyamuni passing into the Mahaparinirvana, Buddha said to his followers that these four main holy places are the place where all the followers of the Buddha Shakyamuni should go and practice so that they can accumulate great merit, or they can receive great benefit from such visits and doing such practices in these holy places.
To become a Buddha's follower, first and foremost, it is very important to have the belief in the Buddha's fundamental teachings, such as law of karma, and to believe in the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha, to believe in other fundamental teachings. Then, based on this, then you will have this wish to become a Buddhist or Buddha's follower. And based on your sincere wish, then first you need to reflect on the cause of refuge, which means to reflect on the fear of experiencing the suffering of samsara. And out of this fear, you need to take refuge in the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha, and then also out of great faith in the Triple Gem, you take refuge, and also out of great compassion, you take refuge. So out of these three causes or reasons, you take refuge in the Triple Gem. So out of these three causes, then you need to receive the refuge vow through a proper ritual or through a proper method, and then you become Buddha said. The followers should examine Buddha's teaching, and after thorough examination, then followers can accept or can believe in the Buddha's teaching. And then Buddha also said it is important to have the faith. The genuine faith is like a sound seed. If the seed is scorched by fire, then by planting such seed in the fertile ground, after that, no matter how much effort that you put to look after it, by having the right moisture, right temperature, right amount of water, etc., but still it will not grow into a good crops. Similarly, without having a sound seed, no matter how much time that you spend to study, contemplate, and meditate on Buddha's teaching, still you won't have the inner realizations, or you won't have the inner qualities. So therefore, faith is very important. But this faith and this examination are in the same context, or in other words, these two are not contradicting to each other, because here faith means faith with a reason. If we examine thoroughly, then through this examination or through such great reason, one can have a very strong faith, unshakable faith. And so such faith is very important.
The right motivation is very, very important to do any Dharma practice. So motivation here means a sincere wish or genuine reason to practice Dharma. The benefit of having the right motivation is that when we do any Dharma practice, if we do with the right motivation, then our practice will become more meritorious and we can accumulate more merit. And if we don't have the right motivation, then not only it means
you don't accumulate much merit, but also it means our practice is not a real Dhamma practice. It is only at a superficial level, but not a genuine Dhamma practice. For example, if the true person is doing circumambulation to a stupa or to a temple, so if both of them have done the same number of circumambulation, but one is doing with the right motivation and one is doing with mundane intention or without right motivation, although physically they have done the same circumambulation and also same number, but the one who has the right motivation will earn much greater merit than the other one. So therefore, having the right motivation can make our practice the real cause to gain liberation and Buddhahood, or can make our practice a real or genuine Dhamma practice. So how to cultivate the right motivation means, first, we need to have the sincere wish to gain liberation from the whole samsara. Actually, Buddha has given enormous amount of teaching, and the purpose of all these teaching is to lead the sentient beings from samsara to temporary result, which is to gain liberation from the samsara, and the ultimate result, which is to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. So, therefore, first and foremost, we should have the total renunciation. Buddha has given the teaching to gain liberation from the samsara, and if you use this teaching to remain in the samsara, then it is not right, then it is against Buddha's teaching or against the purpose of Buddha's teaching. So therefore, first we should have the right thought of renunciation, and then we should have the genuine loving kindness and compassion to all the sentient beings, and then we should have the bodhicitta, which means the wish to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. And in order to attain Buddhahood, we need to engage in Dhamma practice in general and in particular Dhamma practices. And then eventually we can generate the ultimate bodhicitta, and then we can move forward, or we can progress on the 10 bhumis, and then finally we will reach the
first level of Dhamma to 5 fortunate disciples in Saranath, Varanasi. At that time, he turned the wheel of Dharma on the 4 Noble Truths. And first of the 4 Noble Truths is the truth of suffering. So, to answer, what is the suffering? Actually, there are 3 kinds of suffering in the Buddha's teaching, which are known as the suffering of suffering, suffering of change, and all-pervasive suffering of conditioned existence. So suffering of suffering means the suffering that mundane people recognize as suffering. So these are called the suffering of suffering, like physical pain, mental anxiety, and worries, etc., suffering of suffering. Then second, the suffering with change means the mundane happiness that mundane people recognize as happiness. These feelings are actually known as the suffering of change, because these happiness will end with the suffering. For example, in our mundane world, sometimes we feel happy, but such feeling of happiness will not last
for years and years without having any suffering. So such feeling of happiness will end up with the suffering. For example, when we are tired, we stretch our hands. And when we stretch our hands, we feel happy, we feel comfortable, we feel relaxed. But if we need to stretch our hands for so long or many hours, then we won't feel happy. Such feeling happy in the beginning will end with the suffering if we stretch our hands for too long. So similarly, all these mundane happiness will end with the suffering. So therefore, all these are called the suffering of change. Then there's a all-pervasive suffering of conditioned existence, which is more profound or more difficult to understand for the beginners, which we can learn when we study
samsara.
Buddha's teaching more means to have the sincere wish to gain liberation from the whole samsara. So to have this sincere wish, first we need to know the nature of the samsara. If we examine the nature of the samsara, then we will realize the nature of the samsara is none other than suffering. For example, in this world, there are many different places or many different countries. Some are more developed and some are not developed. But wherever we go in this world, we won't find a single place where there's no suffering. So wherever we go, we will have physical pains and mental anxieties and other type of sufferings. So through this, we can realize this whole world is in the nature of suffering. Similarly, this whole samsara is also in the nature of suffering. So therefore, we should not have strong attachment to this samsara, and we should have a sincere wish to gain liberation from this whole samsara. And such genuine wish is called
the Buddha's teaching.
When it says liberation, it refers to the mind that liberates from the mental affliction. But then, within the liberation, there are many different levels depending on how much obscurations one has eliminated from the mind. And to gain liberation, first, it is important to know the source of all these sufferings of the samsara. So if we examine, then we will know that sufferings are caused by negative actions, and negative actions are caused or motivated by the ignorance that fails to understand the law of karma and the attachment and anger and other mental afflictions. And the root of all these mental afflictions is the apprehending inherent identity of a person or clinging that self is truly and independently existent. So such thought is the root of all the sufferings of the samsara. So the method that can control and eliminate such thought is the method to gain liberation from the samsara. Once we gain liberation from the whole samsara, then one can progress on the path, and then one can attain more higher liberations depending on one's own realizations and one's own wisdom. One's own wisdom, and finally, one can gain the ultimate liberation. Once we gain liberation from the whole samsara, then one can move forward and one can gain higher liberations depending on one's own realizations and one's own wisdom. And eventually, one can gain the highest liberation, which is to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings.
I think first, it is important to know the result of virtues and the result of non-virtues. So, if you know the result of virtues are positive and result of negative actions are negative, then naturally it will help us to put more effort to do positive actions, and it will help us to abstain from non-virtues, because no one wish to experience the negative result, which is to experience suffering. Actually, virtuous action will always yield good result, and non-virtuous action will always yield bad result. For example, if the root of the tree is medicine, then all the tree trunk and branches and leaves and flowers and fruits that are grown out of this tree are also medicine. And if the root of the tree is poison, then whatever it grows from that root tree is all negative. Like all the tree trunks and branches, leaves, flowers, etc. are all negative. So similarly, if we do virtuous deeds, then all the results will be positive. And if we do negative actions, then all the results of that action will be negative. Actually, positive action means action that is motivated by a thought that is free from attachment, anger, and ignorance, that fails to know the cause and effect or the law of karma. So such action is called the positive action. And then out of this, one can gain good result or positive result, which means one can gain happiness or the temporary happiness, and then eventually one can gain an enlightened state. And it is the state where one can have the ultimate happiness. Actually, positive actions such as action that is motivated by great loving kindness and compassion, then that kind of action can yield good result or positive result in this samsara. And loving kindness and compassion itself is the antidote that can control the mental afflictions. So any actions that are motivated by these thoughts and others are the cause of gaining good result in the samsara. Then the positive action that will lead us to gain liberation is the wisdom that realizes the true nature of all the phenomena. But of course, practice like loving kindness and compassion can be a factor to gain liberation, but they are not the real cause to gain the liberation from the samsara. The main cause, or the direct cause to gain liberation from this whole samsara, is to gain the wisdom that realizes the true nature of all the phenomena. Actually, the result of the action can be ripened in this life, or after one lifetime, or after a few lifetimes, or after many lifetimes. So there's no certainty of time
when the result will be ripened from such and such actions. So those good practitioners who still face lots of sickness or other obstacles, that means these are not the result of their present positive actions, but these are the result of past negative actions. And also, sometimes when we observe, when an ordinary person observes, ordinary person cannot observe in a proper way, because they can only observe the physical action and verbal action. They cannot observe what kind of motivation that they have to do such and such positive actions. So sometimes in this life also, it seems like they are doing positive action, but in reality, they are doing out of bad motivation. So it means these actions looks like positive action, but actually they are not real positive actions. So maybe because of that also they are experiencing these sickness or obstacles. Actually, the law of karma is fair to every being without any discrimination or exception. So there's no privilege treatment to those who holds higher titles or those who has more power or those who has more fame or more wealth, etc. Whether we have high title or not, whether we are rich or poor, whether we are powerful or not, whether we have a lot of supporters or not, whether we are famous or not, it does not matter. Whoever does the positive action will gain positive result, and whoever does the negative action will gain negative result. And in the law of karma, we cannot hide any action. In this world, we can hide some of our negative actions from government officials or from other people, but we cannot hide any action to law of karma. For example, if one takes poison in front of many people, or if one takes poison secretly without telling to anybody, but still both of these will have some effect. It will cause stomach pain, and even it can take one's own life. Similarly, whether one does actions in front of people or secretly without telling to anybody, but still it will have the same effect. And not only it will have the same effect by doing the action, but actually doing secretly will be more powerful, because not only one has the action, but also one has the power of not telling to others. So whether one has done positive or negative, if one does it secretly, it is more powerful. In the other hand, if one does positive or negative actions in front of people, then it won't have same effect. It is less powerful. And generally speaking, law of karma is fair to everybody. So whoever does positive actions will gain happiness, such as happiness in this life, happiness in next life, and happiness in many lifetimes. And gradually, one can gain liberation from the whole samsara, and then eventually one can attain Buddhahood. If one does negative actions, then one will experience sufferings. So one will not going to gain liberation from the samsara, which means one will not be going to gain liberation from the suffering, because the nature of the samsara is full of suffering. So if one has attachment to the samsara, It means one has attachment to the suffering because nature of the samsara is suffering. So therefore, by knowing all these love karma, then one should put great effort in doing virtuous actions in order to gain happiness for all beings, and one should abstain doing negative actions in order to evolve the suffering originated from Buddha Shakyamuni. So this is something that enable us to follow the rules, to be more disciplined, that will help us to abstain from many wrong actions, and that will help us to cause more and more happiness in this life, in next life, and also in many lifetimes. And eventually, it will help us to attain the enlightenment state, which is the state of ultimate happiness. For example, in this mundane world, there are many people who just want to have a strong body, and for that goal, they can restrict themselves from many actions, and also they restrict themselves from many unhealthy foods and drinks. Although they are tasty, but they can abstain from having these unhealthy foods. So just to gain a strong body, if these people can restrict themselves from doing many wrong actions and also from taking many tasty and unhealthy foods and drinks, just to gain a strong body, then why cannot we restrict ourselves from doing many negative actions that can lead us to be free from suffering and that can lead us to do more virtuous deeds which are the cause of happiness? And such restriction can help us to gain much greater benefit than just to gain a strong body. The monks and nuns' vows are celibacy vows, and based on this, then they need to keep many rules that will help them to abstain from more and more negative actions, and that will help them to be a better person in a greater way. Actually, being a monk or a nun, then it means they can spend their whole time on Dharma studies and practice. They don't need to worry about their livelihood, and they don't need to worry about their own family members. So they have more time and they have more chance to study and practice Dharma. Especially in the modern time, even just to get 1 month or 2 months off from the work is not easy for many lay people. So if they want to receive a 1 month long or 2 month long teaching, then they need to prepare for 1 year ahead or long term ahead. But for monks and nuns, they can receive 2 or 3 months or many months of teaching without preparing 1 year before. Or actually, 1 month before. The teachers are the ones who pass the teachings of Lord Buddha to followers. At the moment, we as an ordinary human being, we don't have the fortune to see Buddhas from our own eyes and to receive Buddha's teaching directly. So without the teachers, it is not possible to receive teaching or to practice teachings. So therefore, we must rely to our teacher. And some might think, just by relying on books, one can study Dharma and practice Dharma. But Buddha's teachings are very precious and profound, which needs more explanations. Just by reading book, it cannot explain all the details. So therefore, we must rely on our teacher. Ideally speaking, the teachers should have many qualities. For instance, first and foremost, the teachers should receive the teachings and study the teaching and practice the teaching, and also teachers should have vows, and also teachers should practice Dharma teaching according to the Buddha's teaching. So if a teacher is acting according to the Buddha's teaching, or if the teacher is a good practitioner, then such teachers are qualified teacher. And it is important to examine the teacher before receiving any teaching from that teacher. First, one need to examine, and then if one realize such teacher is a qualified, then one can take such teacher as one's own teacher. So qualified teacher means a teacher who has all the qualities, including great compassion and other positive thoughts. So teachers should have patience to teach the student, and also teachers should have a sincere wish to teach the students without any wrong motivation. And teachers should teach according to the mentalities of the student. If student can comprehend short teaching, then teachers should not teach long teaching to that particular student. So according to the different mentalities, the teacher should give teaching. But in the public teaching, then the teacher should try to give the teaching in a simple way so that anybody can understand the meaning of these teachings. Actually, there are different vows, but all different vows can be combined into three, which are known as Pratimoksha, Bodhicitta, and Mantrayana vow. Some only has Pratimoksha vow, some has Pratimoksha and Bodhicitta vow, some has Pratimoksha, Bodhicitta, and Mantrayana vows. So depending on your own vows and depending on what kind of teaching that you want to receive, so based on that, then you need to look for a teacher who can teach that particular teaching. But to find that particular teacher, you need to look for particular qualities on that teacher. So there are different qualities depending on different teachings. If one is giving Vinaya teaching, then you need to look for a particular quality. And if you are looking for a teacher who can give Mahayana teaching, then you need to look for a teacher who has the quality to give Mahayana teachings. And then if you are looking for a Mantrayana teacher, then you need to look for a teacher who has the quality to give Mantrayana teaching. So it depends on teaching that you are going to receive. The qualities of the teacher means not only to have the vows, but also to receive the teachings that are passed down from Buddha in an unbroken lineage, and also the teacher who can understand the meaning of these teachings, and a teacher who can teach them with the right motivation that can help,
generally speaking,
the student to understand.
The Mahayana practice is based on total renunciation towards the whole samsara, which is common with other Buddhist schools, and then also based on loving kindness and compassion to all the sentient beings, and then also based on bodhicitta. So bodhicitta is the main teaching or main essence of the Mahayana teaching. And generally speaking, we say the Mahayana has seven greatness. So first greatness is the greatness of object, which means whatever Mahayana practice that we do, we always need to focus on all the sentient beings. So the purpose of doing all the Mahayana practice is for the sake of all the sentient beings. So the object is very wide. The object sentient being is infinite. So therefore, it is called the greatness of object. And then second greatness is the greatness of activity. Whatever actions the Mahayana practitioners do, it is always to benefit both others and oneself. And the third greatness is the greatness of wisdom. In the Mahayana, the wisdom realizes both the selflessness of person and the phenomena completely. And the fourth greatness is the greatness of great diligence with joy. So with such great diligence, one accumulates the merit heap and the wisdom heap for three countless eons. The fifth greatness is the greatness of the skillful means, which means through various methods or through so many methods and ways one practices the Mahayana teaching or one benefits all the sentient beings. So these first five greatness are based on the Mahayana path. Now the next two greatness are based on the resultant state of the Buddhahood. So the sixth one is the greatness of quality, which means the greatness of Buddha's ultimate qualities. So the seventh one is the greatness of enlightened activities. So Buddha's noble activities are infinite, which we cannot comprehend all the enlightened activities. So last two greatness are based on the resultant state of the Buddhahood. So in short, Mahayana means the one that has these seven
actually greatness.
Loving kindness in the Mahayana teaching means the great loving kindness, or infinite loving kindness, or limitless loving kindness, which means wishing all the sentient beings to gain happiness and to engage in the virtuous deeds which are the cause of happiness without having any exception or discrimination. So to practice loving kindness, first and foremost, we need to focus on the object. If our object is limitless, then based on this, we can naturally can develop the infinite loving kindness. So here, object sentient beings means all the beings of the six realms, not only all the Buddhist followers or all the followers of any religions, but also non-believers and all the animals, and also it includes all the other beings. So in short, it means all the beings of the six realms, including the Pardo beings. So if one can focus on all these limitless sentient beings, then naturally we can develop the infinite loving kindness. And the compassion means the great compassion or limitless compassion or infinite compassion, which means wishing all the sentient beings to be free from suffering and the cause of suffering, which are negative actions. So for this also, first it is important to focus on the object. So the object of loving kindness and the object of compassion are the same, which means all the sentient beings. Based on this, then we need to develop the infinite compassion or limitless compassion. So when we develop the infinite loving kindness and compassion, then naturally we can control many negative thoughts towards others. Then we won't have anger or jealousy thoughts or competition thoughts towards any other sentient beings, because we wish to benefit all the sentient beings without any exception through the practice of loving kindness and compassion, and then wish to hate or wish to harm or wish to have jealousy thoughts towards others are opposite of benefiting others. So at the same time, we cannot have both negative thoughts and positive thoughts on the same object. For example, in one glass, we cannot have hot water and cold water at the same time. In one glass, at the same time, it is not possible to have both hot and cold. Either it should be hot or cold. So similarly, either we should have positive or negative at that time. We cannot have these two opposite thoughts at the same time in our mental continuum. So therefore, when we really have the positive thoughts such as infinite loving kindness and compassion, then we can really control our negative thoughts. And by controlling this and through the practice of our positive thoughts, we can prevail peace and harmony to all the beings without any exception. We can develop the infinite loving kindness and compassion to all the sentient beings gradually. First, we can develop the loving kindness and compassion to our close ones, close family members, and then gradually we can extend to our neighbors and people that we know, and then people that we don't know, and then to our enemies, and then eventually to all the sentient beings. So when we extend our positive thoughts towards all the sentient beings, we can categorize the objects, like first to all the people from this continent or that continent, or first like all the human beings, then all the animals, and then beings of other realms. So by categorizing it, we can gradually extend our loving kindness.
The literal meaning of bodhicitta. Bodhi means Buddha. Citta means mind. So bodhicitta means a mind that wish and practice to attain the Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. And this bodhicitta is the essence of all the Mahayana teaching. Without this, we can't do any Mahayana practice. And this bodhicitta is based on its own cause. Actually, all the results are based on its own cause and condition. So similarly, the result bodhicitta is also based on cause. The base or the cause of bodhicitta is great compassion. And the cause of the great compassion is the loving kindness or the great loving kindness. So out of great loving kindness, one can develop great compassion. And out of great compassion, one can develop bodhicitta. So bodhicitta is the mind that sincerely wish to help all the sentient beings by attaining Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. And how to cultivate bodhicitta? The answer is, first, it is important to know the benefit of developing the bodhicitta, as it is explained in great detail in the Bodhisattva Jayavatara by the great Acharya Shantideva. So bodhicitta is like the elixir that transforms iron into gold. Similarly, bodhicitta is the tool that transforms ordinary human beings into Buddha, or that transform ordinary mind or thought into ultimate wisdom. Also, the bodhicitta is like the skillful captain that leads all the passengers to the destination safely. And also there are many other examples. So in short, in the sutra, Buddha said, if the benefit of developing bodhicitta is in a physical form, then the whole universe is too small to contain it. So therefore, it has great benefit. So if you know such great benefit, then it will encourage us to develop this bodhicitta for the sake of all the sentient beings, including Buddha gave himself. Teachings based on law of karma, and all the Buddha's teachings are based on dependent origination. So based on law of karma and dependent origination, Buddha gave enormous amount of teachings in order to suit the different mentalities of the followers. For example, in order to cure different kinds of sickness, the skillful doctor need to give different medicines in order to cure the different disease or sickness of the patients. So similarly, Buddha also has given enormous amount of teachings. Actually, we as a follower of the Buddha should perceive Buddha as a skillful doctor, and we should perceive Buddha's teaching as a medicine, and we should perceive ourselves as a patient, and we should perceive our own mental afflictions such as ignorance, hatred, attachment, etc. as our sickness. And we should perceive receiving teaching and practicing teaching like receiving doctor's advice and following the doctor's advice. So with such perception, we should receive and practice the precious and profound teachings of Lord Buddha. And Buddha Shakyamuni bestowed enormous amount of teachings, but there are three main turning the wheel of Dharma. First one was in Saranat, where he turned the wheel of Dharma on the Four Noble Truths. So Buddha also gave example of these Four Noble Truths.
For example, first it is important to know the sickness, and then second, need to remove the cause of sickness, and third, to have a state which is free from the sickness. And to achieve this, we need the fourth one, which is to adopt the right remedy or right antidote that can overcome the sickness and the cause of sickness. So similarly, the truth of suffering is like knowing the sickness, and truth of origin is like the cause of sickness, and truth of cessation is like a state which is free from the sickness, which means a state that is free from the suffering. And then the truth of path, which means like the right remedy to remove the sickness and the cause of sickness. Truth of path is like adopting the right remedy to overcome the sickness and the cause of sickness. So it means adopting the right path or right method or right dharma practice in order to remove the suffering. And the bodhisattva means a person who has developed and received the bodhicitta vow is known as a bodhisattva. But then there are many different levels of bodhisattva, like bodhisattvas who are on the path of accumulation or part of application or part of seeing or part of meditation. So there are ordinary bodhisattvas and noble bodhisattvas. In short, the main practices of bodhisattvas are the six perfections, or which is known as the paramita. The literal meaning of paramita means to go beyond, which means to go beyond the ocean of samsara. So, therefore, these six perfections are very important. And the first one is known as the perfection of generosity, which means mentally to have the wish to give all the materials and and to give our own merits and body for the benefit of all the sentient beings. And second is known as the perfection of moral discipline, which means to abstain from faults or wrong actions and to perform virtuous deeds or positive actions, and also to help or benefit all the sentient beings without any exception, etc. And then third one is the perfection of patience, which means no matter whatever situation that we may face, we should not disturb our own peaceful mind, even by hearing unpleasant speech about oneself, or even receiving great harms from others. Still, we should not disturb our mind. If our mind is still in a very peaceful state, then that means we have practiced the perfection of patience. And then fourth one is known as the perfection of diligence with great joy. That means putting great effort or having great diligence in performing wholesome deeds with great joy. And then fifth one is known as the meditative concentration, which means to pay attention or to have great concentration on wholesome object with single-pointedness without any distraction. And sixth one is known as the perfection of wisdom. Actually, this perfection is the most important perfection. It is said, without this perfection,
the first five are not called paramita or the perfection. So it is said, the perfection of wisdom is like the eye to see the road. So without the eye, it is difficult for us to go on the path or to go on the road. So this perfection is very important, and it is said by Buddha and great bodhisattvas how important it is to have this perfection of wisdom. So this is a very brief and short explanation on the main practices of
can be combined into two truths, which are known as the relative truth and the ultimate truth. And in the relative truth, there is a self, but there's no self that is truly existent. So in the relative truth also, this self is free from truly existent, because in the relative truth, all the things or all the compound things are dependent origination, and all the compound things are impermanence. Nothing is unchanging. It is always changing. Although we can see only the gross part of the impermanence, but actually it changes momentarily all the time. And that is the subtle part of the impermanence which we don't see by our own ordinary eyes, or we don't understand this directly through our own ordinary mind. The second truth, which is known as the ultimate truth, is none other than the ultimate reality. And to realize this ultimate reality, first it is important to realize the nature of the relative truth. Without realizing the relative truth, it is not possible to realize the ultimate truth. In other words, without realizing the dependent origination or impermanence, it is not possible to realize the ultimate truth. Without realizing the ultimate truth, one would not know the real nature of all the phenomena. And also, one will not going to gain a liberation or the enlightenment state without knowing the ultimate reality. So the teaching on ultimate truth is very profound. But at the same time, it is very important for all the followers to receive such profound teaching at the right time. If one receives this teaching at wrong time, which means one is not ready to receive such teaching, then at that time one receive it, then there's more harm than benefit, because by hearing such teaching, one may fall down in the extreme of nihilism. So therefore, it is very important to be careful. If we understand the view in the wrong way, or if you have a misunderstanding on this ultimate truth, then there's more harm than benefit. For example, actually, if one catches the snake, then it rescues many beings from fear and from danger. So there's a benefit to catch this kind of poisonous snake. But if one make mistake in catching the snake, then the one who tries to catch that person himself or herself will be bitten by the snake and can cause great pain and can cause great harm, even can cause to lose their own life. So if one catches the snake with wrong method, then there's more harm than benefit. So similarly, if one misunderstands the real meaning of ultimate truth, then there's more harm than benefit. So therefore, it is very important to be careful and to learn slowly and to learn at the right time. The self-clinging is the root of all the sufferings of the samsara, because sufferings are caused by negative actions, and these negative actions are caused by three poisonous or mental afflictions. And the root of all these mental afflictions or three poisons is the self-clinging. So therefore, this self-clinging is the root of all the sufferings of the samsara. So unless and until we eliminate this root, we won't be able to gain complete liberation from the sufferings of the samsara. For example, if the root of the tree is poison, then all the tree trunks, branches, leaves, flowers, and fruits that are grown out of such root will be poisonous also. So just by cutting the branches or tree trunks, we'll not be able to remove the poisonous tree completely, because at that time the root is still there. So in order to eliminate this completely, we need to remove the root of the tree. So similarly, it is important for us to remove the root of the sufferings of the samsara in order to remove the sufferings. The process of removing the root of the suffering of the samsara, which is the self-clinging, actually, in general, first and foremost, we need to keep the pure moral discipline with the right motivation. And then, with the right motivation, we need to study and contemplate. And then, finally, we need to do the meditation. So we need to have such kind of structure to practice Dharma in general, and especially to practice the ultimate truth. So when we do the meditation, it is important to have the stable mind. And to stabilize the mind, we need to practice the shamatha, or which is known as the karma abiding. So to do this karma abiding meditation, first, it is important to have an object of meditation which is not far from our own eyes and not so near from our own eyes. And also, the object can be like Buddha Shakyamuni statue, or can be like blue flower. But important thing is, this object should not move. And when we focus on this object, for that, we need to do the 7-point Vedachana meditational posture. Or in other words, we should sit in a cross-legged position, and our spines should be straight, etc. So we should have the meditational posture, and then we should not move our eyelashes or our eyeballs, or we should not blink our eyes, because there's a vein of the thought in our eyes. So if we move this, then there's a danger of generating more thoughts or generating thoughts during the meditation. So therefore, we should not blink our eyes, or we should not move our eyes. And also, we should not move our own body. We should sit still and then
focus on this unmoving object of meditation single-pointedly without having any distraction. So it means our mind is completely settled on the object of meditation, or we place our mind completely on the object of meditation without any distractions. So when we have such practice, or when we have this shamatha practice or karma abiding practice, then based on this, then gradually we can realize the ultimate nature or ultimate reality. And seeing the ultimate reality directly is known as the inside wisdom, or wisdom that is obtained by the noble beings or noble bodhisattvas. So when we have this inside wisdom, then that is the real antidote that directly eliminates the root of all the suffering, which is the self-clinging. So through this elimination, one can gain the liberation from whole samsara. So seeing the ultimate reality directly by our own wisdom and gaining liberation from the whole samsara are at the same time. So therefore, these two practices, which are known as the shamatha and vipassana, or karma abiding and inside wisdom, are very, very important. Then once we reach the first bhumi, or once we realize, or once we have seen the ultimate reality directly, then we won't fall down in the samsara again, but we will only progress forward on the path, and eventually we can attain the Buddha.
The Mahayana tradition has two kinds, which are known as the Paramitayana tradition and the Vajrayana tradition. The Vajrayana tradition has more methods to realize the ultimate truth or ultimate reality when we are on the path of accumulation or application. And then also it has more methods to gain liberation or to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. So this Vajrayana is very secret. It is not given to anybody. It has to have special criteria or special qualification to receive the Vajrayana teaching or Tantra teaching. Actually, all these tantric teachings, Buddhist tantric teachings, are directly given by the Buddha. So the word Tantra can mean the tantric teaching of Buddhist tradition, or it means the mental continuum of our own consciousness. In the Vajrayana tradition, it is very important to receive the empowerment before doing the Vajrayana practice. For example, if one does not own a land, then to use that land, first one need to get permission or authority from the landowner. Without receiving such authority, if one use that land, then the landowner can give punishment to oneself, because one is using the land without any authority. So similarly, without receiving the empowerment, we don't have the
authority or the permission to practice the Vajrayana path. So in order to practice the Vajrayana path, first it is very important to receive the empowerment. Actually, in the Vajrayana tradition, the empowerment is not just a doorway to enter into the Vajrayana path, but it is also the main path or main practice of the Vajrayana path. So therefore, receiving empowerment is very, very important for all the Vajrayana followers.